Before we get started, you already know about The Low Post with Zach Lowe and The Hoop Collective featuring Brian Windhorst. But have you listened to The VC Show with 8-time NBA All-Star Vince Carter and co-host Roz Gold on Wude? They talk all things basketball with some of the biggest names in sports and entertainment and give their unfiltered thoughts on the NBA. Plus, Vince will share stories from his illustrious 22-year career. That's The VC Show. Listen where you are listening to this podcast.
What's up, guys? Welcome to a brand new episode of DC and RC. I'm Daniel Cormier. That's my boy, Ryan Clark. This week on the show, we're going to talk about Erin Blanchfield and her fantastic win last weekend. We also do some tough talk as Connor and Michael Chandler arrive in Las Vegas. And as with every week, we tap in or we tap out. But RC, it's a holiday today, baby. Happy Mardi Gras, my brother.
Man, I forgot it was Mardi Gras, and we were actually planning to go to a parade today, last night, and I was like, holy hell, I gotta work. And so then Yonk was like, well, I guess we're not going to a parade, but for all those other people who are enjoying Mardi Gras in New Orleans, you guys have a great time. I did buy 2 king cakes today, and I'm gonna bust one open as soon as this show's over.
RC, so you can't go, you guys don't have parades in Baton Rouge? Do you not have parades in Baton Rouge?
So we have a parade. We had a parade Saturday. I didn't go to it, but we had a parade Saturday. I don't think they have parades here on Mardi Gras Day, though. I believe all of those parades are the parades that are in the NO.
Well, that's sad because we have the biggest Mardi Gras in the world outside of New Orleans in Lafayette, and we're not even the state capital. Y'all should be ashamed of yourself that we can put on a better party in little old Lafayette. We cook better. We cook better. We got a better Mardi Gras in Lafayette. That's why Lafayette is literally just the best city in the entire town.
DC, you do realize I'm not about to defend Baton Rouge. I ain't from here, bro.
Well, yeah, I know you're not, but you went to school.
This does nothing for me. Oklahoma State. I've been there. Are we going to compare that place to here in food?
Stop. All right. I give up. You make me tap out. Which is something. Look at that, Ryan. You see that? Which is something the former strawweight champion Jessica Andrade did last Saturday night as she took on Erin Blanchfield. RC, how impressive was it that Erin Blanchfield did that to Jessica Andrade? But not only doing it to Jessica Andrade, she's starting to put these wins on top of each other after what she did to Molly McCann in New York City. How impressed are you by this young lady?
So here's what's crazy about it. When I'm watching it, I'm thinking before the fight, here is Erin Blanchfield's Sean O'Malley moment. Here is her Khamzat Chimaev moment, right? Where you jump up and you fight a Gilbert Burns or you fight a Piotr Jan and you show yourself so well that now people think of you in that type of contention. Bro, she dominated Jessica Andrade. And what was crazy was in the first round, she was winning the exchanges on the feet. Now, Jessica has more power than Erin has. So at the end of some of those exchanges, you would look at Erin's face or you would look at the punch that Jessica landed and be like, okay, ooh, Jessica's now working. But she held her own on her feet, got her down to the mat in the second round. And I'm going to say this, and DC, I'll ask you if you agree. This was more impressive than Khamzat Chimaev. This was more impressive than Sean O'Malley because she actually got the finish against a fighter in Jessica Andrade who is feared on the women's side of the UFC plate. And so to me, this puts Erin not only in contention for a title shot, I feel she's earned the next title shot, especially after what we watched Jessica Andrade do to Lauren Murphy just a little over a month ago.
Yeah, absolutely. And Jessica Andrade had looked like a destroyer lately, right? She had the standing arm triangle against Amanda Lemos, and then she goes out there and she beats on Lauren Murphy for 15 minutes, and it was brutal. So for Erin to do her in that way was as impressive of a performance that I've seen. But while I agree, Ryan, that all things equal, it's more impressive, I just don't know if the skill level warrants that distinction, being that Gilbert Burns is just, you know, Gilbert Burns, and Piotr Jan is Piotr Jan. So I don't know. Jessica Andrade is that to the female division, but boy, those guys that those dudes beat were just animals. But I will say this, RC, and I think this is where you and I agree. Sean O'Malley went from 10 to 1 by beating Piotr Jan in a very close fight that many think that he lost. Gilbert Burns and Khamzat Chimaev had a very close fight. Khamzat won, went all the way to 2. Erin Blanchfield should sit at number 1, no questions asked, as she finishes the weekend. She's number 3. Corbin Jenkins told me she's number 3. You know, so I can't really see the return right now, guys, so I can't see the rankings. But she's at number 3. I don't think for a second, RC, that anyone should be above her after she did Andrade like that. And I know many will say, well, Andrade can make flyweight or strawweight. She can make strawweight. She can make 115. Doesn't matter. We have seen Andrade finish Caitlin Chookagian. We have seen Andrade beat up on Lauren Murphy at 125. She's as good as they come in this division. And Erin Blanchfield should be number 1.
Yeah, I believe that Erin Blanchfield should be number 1. And I do get what you're saying, because we're talking about taking that next step, which is Valentina Shevchenko. And that's a different step when you're looking at what you'd be asking Erin Blanchfield to do. But then what's next, though, DC? Is it some sort of number 1 contender fight that now puts her as the next challenger for the championship? And so now I think you're in a place where you save yourself by placing her at number 3, because that says she has to have another fight before stepping up to fighting the champion. And it may be because they were thinking in the same way that you were. But when you watch her in the octagon with Jessica Andrade, we obviously saw her fight Meatball Molly, and it wasn't much of a match. She took her down early. She won on the feet early, and then with the ground and pound, she ends up finishing her. I think it was by submission. I'm not sure if I remember correctly. And so now you beat Jessica Andrade in that way. To you, what was more impressive? Was it her stand-up game, DC, or her ground game?
I think for me it was the poise, RC. She was so poised in there, being that she was in there with an extremely hard puncher in Jessica Andrade, a fighter that fights with constant pressure. She not only survived the stand-up, she won a lot of the exchanges, as you said earlier. We know she can wrestle. We know she can grapple. But for her to hold her own in every facet of mixed martial arts is so impressive. And we don't see Andrade get beat up on like that. The last time we saw Andrade look outclassed was against Valentina Shevchenko, when Valentina kept taking her down. Valentina, RC, was less willing to stand with Jessica Andrade than Erin Blanchfield was. Now, many will say that was Jessica's plan, to go out and beat her in the way that many thought that she could lose. But she took Jessica down much earlier than Blanchfield did. It was so impressive to watch this young lady compete, and compete at that level. She is not only matching, she is exceeding the level of competition. And you and I both know how difficult that is to do. But in regards to the title fight, RC, you put her at 3. It says she should fight someone else, but I don't know who else should go before her. Right. Obviously, Alexa Grasso is going to fight for the belt next. But man, who's next? Because I thought the only thing that makes sense now is her and Tyler Santos, but the only person that's up cheering for that is Valentina, because it would seem as though Erin Blanchfield could beat Tyler Santos.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's the thing. I believe you and I were on the side of Santos being able to get a rematch after we saw how that fight went. And now that it will not be Santos, to have Erin Blanchfield and Santos in kind of a eliminator fight, I think is going to be the next move. But that's very tough on both of those women, as they are top competitors and probably both feel like they've already earned an opportunity to get a chance to fight Valentina Shevchenko for Santos again, and for Erin Blanchfield the first time. But someone who I think could shed a little light on what Erin Blanchfield wants to do next would be Erin Blanchfield. And here we go, one round with the new top contender.
There she is. We're going one round. Erin Blanchfield. Erin, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, of course. Thank you for having me.
I mean, Erin Blanchfield, very rarely do we get this excited about a young prospect. But what you are putting on paper right now is something we have not seen in a long time. Was this what you expected when you made your UFC debut? I remember a fighter meeting where you told me, I'm going to be good at this. I can fight everywhere. But has it been a little faster than you even thought? Because it has been amazing to watch.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I definitely got a main event slot maybe faster than I thought. And as number 10, I definitely wasn't thinking I was going to fight number one or three. Not that I didn't think I was ready. I just didn't think that they would boost me up that quick. But looking at the vision, it kind of makes sense. They need someone, a new contender to fight for a title. So, yeah, I was super excited about it. And I'm glad I was able to get the job done the way I did Saturday.
Erin, it's not very often that people come on our show or fighters get on the show and DC calls them by their entire name. Every time he asks you a question or introduces you, he's like, Erin Blanchfield. So that lets you know the type of impression you've already made on my co-host. But when you step into the octagon, you beat Molly McCann, and now on short notice, you're going to have to fight Jessica Andrade, who is one of the most feared women in entire mixed martial arts world. What was the preparation for this fight like?
My preparation for my wrestling camp before I knew I was going to fight Jessica was for Talia Santos, who's number one in the division. So I already knew I had a tough task at hand. And then getting Jessica last minute, made a little bit strategy changes, but nothing too crazy. I know everybody in the top five is super tough, so it wasn't anything too mind-blowing. So, yeah, just a couple changes that we had to make in our strategies and just implement it when you go into the fight.
Fighting Jessica Andrade, especially after what she did to Lauren Murphy last, was there anything surprising inside the octagon on Saturday night? And, Erin, I got to ask you a question. Most people will point to Valentina's fight against Jessica and say, hey, Erin was more willing to stand with Jessica than Valentina. Were you aware of that? Because generally, you'll go and wrestle somebody down, but you did really good in stand-up.
I think, I didn't really think of it in that sense, that I was willing to stand more than Valentina. But I definitely was willing to strike. I knew she was going to have good takedown defense. I knew she was going to she knew that I was going to be looking for that in the fight. So I knew I was going to have to strike and find my opportunities to get that takedown. It was just kind of using my striking until I found that opportunity. And I knew I could hang there, and I knew what I needed to do not to get clipped too much and hit her back. But there was nothing too surprising about her game. Honestly, we watched a lot of her fights, and she's fights pretty similar throughout most of her career. So there was a couple of key things that we focused on, and I think it worked perfectly.
When you look back at this fight, you got an opportunity to show how well you can strike, but also you get the takedown and the submission of an extremely tough fighter. For you, do you draw back on the extensive training? Because you are one of the new age fighters who has been training to do this their entire lives, which is why I feel like we see some of the early success. How excited were you to be able to show that you can not only strike with someone like Jessica Andrade, but when the fight is taken to the mat, you can dominate there as well?
Oh, for sure. I've been training since I was 7 years old, so I feel very well-rounded everywhere. And I think just having all that experience training, whoever your opponent is, I know I could fight anywhere, and I don't necessarily need a whole camp to focus on somebody because I know what I could do everywhere. So getting last minute opponent changes isn't a big deal because I know how to fight, and I know how to fight everywhere. And I know my fight IQ is good, and I'm getting experience every fight, and it gives me more confidence going into the next one.
Erin, you are now ranked the number 3 fighter in the world. So when you beat someone like Jessica Andrade, people start to question, where will we see her? What does she have next? You're number 3 in the world. And I think you're underrated now, because I think after what you did Saturday, there should be a 1 next to your name. But what's next for Erin Blanchfield? Is it title shot? Are you ready for the title shot now? Are you ready to call out the queen, Valentina Shevchenko? Or do you think you need one more?
Oh, I think a title shot next would definitely make sense. I called for it in the cage. And, you know, there's only two girls ahead of me. One of them already pulled out of a fight with me for whatever her reasons. And the other I know is still hurt right now. So I think after Valentina fights, I think I should get the winner next.
You know, Aaron, we've seen a lot of fighters lose the fight to Valentina Shevchenko before ever stepping into the octagon. And now you moving in to that number three slot. What can make you different than some of the other championship contenders we've seen Valentina Shevchenko dominate through her reign as champion?
Oh, I definitely do think that's true. A lot of people lose that fight before they even go in there. I think a lot of people even do that with someone like Jessica because they definitely have a bit of an aura around them. But I mean, I believe in my preparation, and I'm confident in it. And I know that when I get in there, I could do what I need to do to win that fight. And that's how I feel about every fight. And that's not going to change no matter who it's against.
You're 23 years old, right? We got a lot of young fighters right now. And it seems as though your guys' youth allows for you to be almost, hey, I can handle anything. I mean, how much does that go-get-it attitude, because again, Ryan, I'm telling you, man, I spoke to this young lady in a fighter meeting very early in her career, and she almost forecasted this. And I always say youthful ignorance, right? Like, you don't know the difference. How much does releasing all the pressure help you, Aaron, to just kind of be free? Because it seems as though you young fighters are just free to kind of approach this thing without any really real hesitancy.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it's partially because, like, I've been training everything since I was a kid. So it's like, even though I'm young, I feel like I've been doing it forever. And I have the confidence from all the years that I've already put in. And yeah, I think it really is just that. It's just, I feel like I've been doing it forever, and I know what I can do, and I'm not as scared to go take that opportunity and ask for it.
You know, yeah. For you, Aaron, DC saying you basically forecasted what your career would be like and where you could be at this point. When you look at the rest of 2023, what would the dream year for Aaron Blanchfield look like from a schedule and accomplishment standpoint?
You know, I think if I could fight for the title, International Fight Week in July, that'd be perfect. Mm. And yeah, and then whatever after that, I don't really know what after that, because that would be, it'd be a little over halfway through the year. But I know if I can get that, I'd definitely be super happy.
I don't think just you would be super happy. I think a lot of people would be happy to see you competing for a championship. RC, look at that face. She's just a baby, man. 23 years old. Hey, the baby face assassin.
Hey, when I was 23, I didn't know nothing about life. So I definitely wasn't accomplishing the things that Aaron has. Aaron, thank you so much for your time. You are absolutely phenomenal to watch in the octagon. And we look forward to seeing what happens in the future for you. And that future seems to be extremely bright. And as young as you are, it can be extremely long as well. You have a good day. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. What's something that works so well that it's basically magic? Air conditioning, noise-canceling headphones, meeting-free Fridays. Well, what about selling with Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business, from the launch at your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million order stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're auctioning autographed apparel or selling sleek skis, Shopify helps you sell everywhere, from their all-in-one commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling. Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's extensive help resources are there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/DCRC. All lowercase, go to shopify.com/DCRC now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/DCRC.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Well, that's a top contender in Erin Blanchfield that knows exactly what she wants and also what she's learned, what she's earned. Now, what we do know is the tough coaches have entered the house. Our guy, Connor, and Mike, well, let me say again, my guy, Connor, and our guy, Michael Chandler, have made it to Vegas. It is time for this thing to jump off. DC, what is it like for these coaches when they first enter the house for the Ultimate Fighter competition?
Exciting. It's exciting. You know, you see Connor walking into the Apex, you get a house, you get a car, you get cars, you get everything. And it's exciting because you're excited to meet these athletes that are hoping to earn their way into the UFC. Ryan, I kind of like to compare it to this. You know, when you get through preseason, and you're in the first game of the year, and you're just filled with excitement. Your teammates are running on the field. They can't contain themselves. But then when you get to week 7 or week 8, and maybe you're not as successful as you planned on being, it starts to get a little wearing on you. That's what it feels like. The excitement early, but you got to get momentum. Because if you don't get momentum, then it starts to become those dog days of summer where you're just not really getting what you want out of it. But man, it's exciting right now. You're excited about the prospects of helping people, and you're excited about being on TV for weeks at a time and taking part in these young men's journey.
Yeah, I think, you know, what's so exciting about this, and I said exciting because you use that word, is you get to learn the personalities of these coaches. And even though we could see you guys at press conferences, or we could see you with everything you do post-fight, you don't truly get to know a dude. You don't know what type of leader he is. You don't know what type of communicator he is. And a lot of times in watching this, and I think back to the last Ultimate Fighter and watching Juliana Pena coach, I thought to myself, man, she knows so much about mixed martial arts. She can communicate that so well. And I think we'll learn some of these things about these coaches. And then on the other side too, you learn what type of competitor these dudes are, which is the same thing we saw with you and Stipe, the same thing we saw with Juliana and Amanda. And so you'll get to see those things again about Connor and Michael Chandler, which I believe only builds up the anticipation for the fight. But with you, DC, what did you learn about yourself while you were in the house coaching and during this competition where it truly wasn't about DC, the fighter anymore. It was DC, the man and the coach.
Very patient. I'm much more patient than I thought, because these are men, right? These aren't kids. I coach kids. Ryan, you coach kids. It's easy, but it's harder when you're coaching an adult, a person that has an idea of who they are and what they want to be. It's not as easy to impart yourself on these people. And when you treat them like the kids, sometimes that you get kickback. You saw me there going with this kid named Thailand Clark. And the reason I was going with him was because he was lipping off at me, right? So I was like, okay, then you and I will grapple. So it's like, it's hard to really make them take the lessons, but also have them understand that you're still active. You're still an active fighter. So when they lip off, your first reaction is to want to go get them. So then you grapple with them and you train with them and try to put them in their place. But the vast majority of these people, especially if the rumors that we're hearing are true, that it's a second chance season, they will want to absorb everything. They will want to take in anything they can get from Conor McGregor, the megastar, and Michael Chandler, the guy that's a star today and still fighting at the highest points of the fight game. So it's a very important part of the process for these athletes.
DC, a lot of these fighters, we don't really know them. Can you tell me how the process of picking a team goes? Like, how do y'all dive in to who you actually want to coach?
RC, it's like a war room. It's actually the craziest thing, bro. Like, we sit in a room, they give us all, like, their bio sheets, and we watch them fight. It's just like drafting someone. You go and you look at these kids. Now, it's much easier if, again, the rumors that we're hearing are true, and this is a comeback season, because there is so much tape on these guys that are going back into the Ultimate Fighter house. But it's hard, man. A lot of these kids are unknown, because if it's comeback fighters versus new fighters, it's going to be hard to really judge the new fighters, but you'll have a lot of research on the guys that are coming back. So it makes it for an even more difficult season and a more difficult choosing process, because it's like picking a free agent versus my son said some crazy stuff to me today watching First Take, RC. He goes, why doesn't the Jets or whoever has the number one pick, he goes, why don't they trade the number one pick and then try to get to the Bears, and then the Bears get rid of Justin Fields? I go, you don't trade a guy that's proven for a kid coming out of college. You don't do it.
They might trade him, DC.
They better not trade
little,
that dude. For
Lil Daniel might be right, bro.
Get out of here, man.
There are conversations happening right now, and it could be smoke signals. It could be some type of cloud or fog they're trying to cast over the draft so they could get all the draft capital they could possibly want for Bryce Young or for somebody that wants CJ Stroud.
That's what he said.
Or
that's
Will
what he said.
Levis. But there's actual conversation that leaving the Senior Bowl, many teams believe that they'll trade Justin Fields away and draft somebody at number one. Don't shoot the messenger. Don't be mad at me and Lil Daniel.
RC, but that's the thing, right, RC? Like, on this season of The Ultimate Fighter, it's like, if I have a guy that I have seen fight in the UFC before, I know what he can give me. When I'm picking that team, I'm taking that guy. I'm not taking the kid that is coming off the regional scene and starting to try and earn his way. And if he does, it'll be his first time. That's going to be Bryce Young. His first snap in the NFL will be his first snap. We've seen Justin Field for years. So I feel like Connor and Michael will have to really choose smart and be wise so that they don't make a mistake. And all these conversations that they're having, Ryan, I think it's all absurd, because a couple years ago, Justin Fields was pretty much the same kid as we got coming out of college right now.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. When you think about this season of The Ultimate Fighter, there's obviously that climax or that peak or that pinnacle where we'll actually get to see Michael Chandler and Conor McGregor step into the octagon. But that's not the only fight that the UFC has made for this year. And Dana has absolutely been on it. We have John Jones, Ciryl Gane, Valentina Shevchenko and Alexa Grasso. We got Bo Nickel is going to fight Jamie Pickett. We got Piotr Jan, Leon Edwards, and Kamaru Usman 3. When you look at some of these fights that have already been made for 2023, DC, what are some of the fights that you're most interested in or excited about?
Listen, RC, I've started to understand when it's important, you're around, right? So I get like a really good dinner for free, right? So like when it's an important fight, I get a really good dinner for free. So John Jones and Ciryl Gane, you going to be there?
Yep.
Free meal. Leon Edwards versus Kamaru Usman 3, you going to be there?
Yep.
You see what I'm saying? Free meal in London. So it's like the big fights to me are the ones that you go to because you go to the big ones. I got those two fights as yep. two of my most anticipated fights, not only for that, but because of what they mean to yep. the UFC and to the sport as a whole. And honestly, I'm going to kind of be a homer on the last one and say Max Holloway versus Arnold Allen because I got to know if Max can still compete with these young, hungry lions that are trying to take his place. And I also got to know, does Arnold Allen have what it takes to make his way into the elite of the featherweight division? Because that man right there, that bad Hawaiian, that brother, as they say out in the brada in Hawaii, is a bad, bad boy, Max Holloway. So Arnold Allen's going to have to step up to the challenge if he wants to fight the blessed one.
Well, you know, so for me, DC, obviously John Jones, Ciryl Gane, would be at the top of my list. I'm going to go with a different championship rematch, and I'm going to go with Izzy and Alex. I think seeing that fight again and the way it ended very similarly to what we saw Kamaru Usman, Leon Edwards, the backstory with both of those two men, I'm extremely excited and interested in seeing what can happen on April 8th. And the other fight that I'm looking forward to will be Aljamain Sterling and Henry Cejudo.
When
you think about who Cejudo was when he left this sport, he was a guy that was in a situation where he was not only holding two belts, but he was ascending. He was getting better. And now taking that time off, Aljo Sterling becoming the champion, but still one of those champions that seems to be disrespected. Even in beating TJ Dillashaw and Piotr Jan, we aren't saying that he's one of those guys that could stay atop of the bantamweight division. And so him getting an opportunity to go prove himself against Triple C, that's something that I'm extremely interested in seeing. And who does Henry Cejudo step back into the octagon as? I think that's something that we need to get answered.
RC, they caught me slipping again. You know how Dominic Cruz always say, I don't do my research. I didn't even know that one was announced yet. You cheating. I think you're actually cheating. That's a rumor. I think that's a rumor and not official.
I don't think it's a rumor, DC. I don't think it's a rumor.
They done caught me slipping again. All right, man. Well, I guess it's not. Let's hear from the champion, Aljamain Sterling.
I will say I'm fighting May 6th against Henry Cejudo. This is a fight for legacy. The most top five wins in bantamweight history for this guy. Going to be taking on a guy who cut the line in Henry Cejudo to get a title shot. And rightfully so, I'm not saying he didn't deserve it, but he cut the line and he didn't get to go through the gauntlet of 135ers like I did. You're good, but you're just not on my level. And I can't wait to show the world. And still, Aljamain Sterling is still the best damn bantamweight on this planet.
And then caught me slipping again. I didn't know this video existed, dog. Aljamain Sterling confirms it. He's fighting Henry Cejudo. And Ryan, you said that he's been underrated a bit. This is the final step. The reason he's been underrated is because Dillashaw left as the champion. Piotr Jan was the champion and was beating Aljo in the first fight. So they felt like he won it in a fluky way. Henry Cejudo was the champion when he walked away. He beat Cejudo. There are no more questions. There are no more people that walked away from the weight class with the belt. He will have beaten them all. It is a tremendous opportunity for Aljamain Sterling. And honestly, it's time for people to stop sleeping on the bantamweight champion of the world. But Henry Cejudo is a winner, Ryan. I'm telling you, and I've said it time and time again, this kid won the Olympics as a child. This kid was one of the worst wrestlers in the world the year prior to winning the Olympics. He was 30th out of 34 guys in the bracket. Fast forward 12 months, dude is the Olympic champion. He has an ability to prepare himself like no one I have ever seen before. And this guy is confident. I did an interview where I took Aljamain Sterling to Henry Cejudo's house, RC, and I tried to start a fight between them. And Henry talked to him like he didn't belong on the same level as him. This is going to be an interesting one.
Yeah, well, I think when you look at these two dudes, one, it's perfect personalities to build up a fight, right? To set up a fight where we're excited to see two men step into the octagon. And it's going to be built as Aljamain Sterling's opportunity to show the world he belongs, to show the world he's as good as he believes. And for Henry, and for Henry Cejudo to finally and once and for all cement himself as one of the greatest mixed martial artists ever by coming back into the UFC, stepping into the octagon the first time and hoisting the belt once again. I don't know if it's going to be a knockout. I don't know if it's going to be a submission. But if we see somebody tap out, if we see somebody get knocked out, it's going to be one of those moments where you and John are octagon side and it's going to be put on a stinking t-shirt because it will be that exciting. But with that said, DC, it's time for us to tap in or tap out.
All right, guys, this weekend, a pair of top 10 light heavyweights face off between Nikita Krylov and Ryan Spann. With Jiří Procházka on the shelf, DC, tap in or tap out. Either of these men with a win can be next in line for the champ.
I tap out. I still tap out because you still have Jan Błachowicz. You still have Magomed Ankalaev. I think that those two guys that fought for the belt before Jamahal Hill won it and fought to a draw are going to be next. So while these guys can put themselves in a position, I think they put themselves in a position for a number one contenders fight, not a title fight. It feels like Ankalaev is next for Jamahal Hill.
Yeah, I think the exact same way. I tap out on this, DC. Maybe this makes one of those guys, whoever wins this fight, the next contender to get an opportunity or to put himself in the fight that gives him a title shot. But I believe that there are three or four names in front of the winner of this fight. What's up, Jake?
Also this weekend on ESPN+, Jake Paul and Tommy Fury finally go toe-to-toe in the boxing ring. RC, tap in or tap out that Tommy Fury is Jake Paul's toughest opponent to date.
I'll tap in because he's an actual boxer and that he's a part of the sport. But it's not like Tommy Fury has a list of people we actually know that he's beaten. And so I give him the list because it's his actual job. And that's the single reason.
This guy right here is so disrespectful, bro. You are so disrespectful to these dudes. But guess what? No, bro, I'm on the same board. I'm tapping in because he's an actual boxer. But could Tommy Fury seem any less interested than he is in this fight? Dude, don't go to the press conference. It's like, what is going on, Tommy Fury? You're going to fight Jake Paul, a guy that has momentum. But Jake Paul, while it is his toughest fight on paper, RC, Jake Paul can actually fight, so I kind of think he's going to win.
I do, too. I do, too, DC. Corporate Jake.
All right, guys. Following UFC 284, cameras caught Volk and Islam having this exchange.
Should we do it again?
Yeah, of course.
Good. Maybe Abu Dhabi.
Yes.
You deserve one in Abu Dhabi. It's my turn to get booed.
So, DC, tap in or tap out, Volk and Islam running it back in Abu Dhabi later this year.
I tap in on the great fight. I tap out because Islam's got work to do in his own weight class, and so does Alexander Volkanovski. Volkanovski owes it to Yair Rodriguez to go and give him an opportunity to try to become the undisputed champion of the world. And I don't know if it's fair to Beneil Dariush, if he beats Charles Oliveira, to not get his chance to fight for the lightweight championship of the world. Whilst, and this is the danger in super fights, because you get a close super fight and people are clamoring to see it again, when in reality we have two divisions that need the champions back in order to really give us a little clarity.
Agreed. I tap out on that as well, because when you think about what this does to both divisions. It puts them on hold. And then now you're looking at these two champions. And if you get a fight that's another close fight and Alexander Volkanovski does win, do you run it back and have a trilogy? And so I think you allow these men to go and take care of the business in their own division. And now if they go on another run, you set that fight up later when you feel like you've kind of run out of people to fight or opponents in their own divisions.
All right, guys, another novelty athletic venture for you guys, Rugball, the combination of wrestling and basketball on the hardwood. RC, tap in or tap out on Rugball?
I tap out. And I tap out on people making up stupid ways to wrestle or stupid ways to shoot basketballs or play pool or play chess or make phone calls or drive cars. I tap out on it. This is really, really dumb. Because all they're doing is hugging each other and thrusting their pelvises onto one another while waiting on the basketball. I'm tapping all the way out on this, DC.
Are they wearing singlets? I mean, I'm tapping in, man. I'm tapping in on Rugball because it looks like the stuff they do in Dagestan, but you just add singlets. RC, tell me this does not look fun. Tell me that doesn't look fun, RC.
It don't look fun. It don't look
fun. RC, who wants to dribble? Why should you have to dribble a basketball? You know, I didn't
know. Because it's basketball. That's why. Corporate J, interrupt this guy.
All right, guys, last one.
Let me say this.
Get DC.
I didn't know before if I liked no dribbling, but I've played the game, and it's a fun game, RC. I'm telling you. It's fun to not dribble.
All right, guys, last one. It seems that jorts are making a comeback. An MMA fighter recently chose to rock spandex jorts during his recent fight. DC, tap in or tap out on spandex jorts in MMA?
Man. Come on, man. You see, this is the thing I'm talking about. This is why you got to wear a uniform. This is why you want uniform, because dudes can't do stuff like this. Like, this looks ridiculous. I am more into rug basketball than I am into blue jean shorts inside of an octagon. I'm out.
I tap in.
I tap out.
I tap in. This is very down south. This is very Lafayette, Upper Louisiana, Arkansas, Mississippi, Alabama. I tap in on this. This is very regional. And I think that these guys should be able to represent where they're from in their jorts. This is 100% something that should be done over and over again in mixed martial arts.
His name is probably Jim Bob. His name is probably Jim Bob, too.
It probably was. Jim Bob Cooter.
I am not wearing jorts, RC. RC,
DC,
man.
Hey, football season's over. Don't make them in your size.
Hey,
that's all
on,
that
RC.
Is. Don't make them in your size.
All they got to do is put me in a big 2X and just put drop the pole. You know what I'm saying, RC? Put me some big jorts and I'll dance for you. Ryan, listen. Football season's over, my friend. How you enjoying all this time now at home, just kind of relaxing?
You know what, man? I cleaned my closet yesterday. I organized some clothes. Today I'm going to clean my drawers out and, you know, give some things to some people, give some stuff away. I'm just doing what you need to do in the off season, which is get ready. But the thing about the off season is this for me, DC, I get to go to fights. We got John Jones, Ciryl Gane in 2 weekends. I'll be in London with you a little bit after that. So we're going to enjoy that. You can catch DC and RC wherever you get your podcast, 12 a.m. on ESPN2. I'm RC. That is DC. We appreciate all the support. Keep building those numbers. We'll keep giving you content.